Hi, I'm Marlena, and I want to welcome you to Marlena, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream, where for about the next 60 minutes or so, we'll be taking your calls at 1-866-666-7926. Come on in, sit down, take your shoes off, give me a call, won't you?
Movement everywhere, improvement. 150 million tongues, one clear voice from the land down under. A song, the sound of thunder, singing the dream to opening ears all over the world. There's a buzz in the air, and the people from far and near have made a choice. The choice is clear. Changing what it means to be blind, step by step, one day at a time. Still much to do, but it shall be. Let the sighted eyes of the world will be able to see. There will be changes. The power of the dream. Do diligence by you and me. Changing what it means to be blind. Women of every nation are rising to the occasion to change humankind by movement and mind. We shall be as one. What of youth and children? Empowerment is their freedom. And we must convey by example so they can say, no big deal, I'm blind. And the eyes of the earth will acknowledge the person first through our vision by knowing our a step one day at a time. Still much to do, but it shall be. At the sight and eyes of the world, we'll be able to see. And there will be changes. The power of the dream. Do diligence by you and me. Changing what it means to be blind. Many drops of rain grow forests and bring big mountains down. Hands across all border boundaries and nations take fall down. Lift the veils, unfurl the sails, new journeys will abound. No one but ourselves can stop us now. One day at a time. Still much to do, but it shall be. At the sight and eyes of the world, we'll be able to see. And there will be changes. The power of the dream. Do diligence by you and me. Changing what it means to be blind. Changing what it means to be blind. Movement.
Changing what it means to be blind, doing things one day at a time. And that's what this program is about tonight. Hello there. I'm Marlena, and we've got a very feature-rich show tonight for you. We will be taking calls, but in the beginning part of our program, we're going to have a new friend to ACB Radio and to me joining us, someone whom I just met yesterday and was so very impressed with his take, if you will, on what we as blind people need to do to help make ourselves rescuable, help make ourselves found, help the law enforcement community, no matter where we live, to know where we are. That I invited Chief Roger Baker of the Des Moines, Washington, no, not Des Moines, Iowa, Des Moines, Washington Police Department to join me. Roger, are you on the line?
Yes, Marlena, I am.
It's great to have you. Welcome to ACB Radio, which you will be heard worldwide.
Well, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
I was very, the discussion on tonight's Marlena program is dealing with how do we prevent another kind of Katrina disaster, particularly for people with disabilities, and in our case, particularly for people who are blind. And let me just tell folks that just after Roger, we will have Mike Hingson on. And Mike, of course, is the blind gentleman who, with his guide dog, Roselle, was able to evacuate from, I believe he was on the 78th floor at the World Trade Center on 9/11. And then following Mike, we will have Dale Mohammed, who is the Legislative Affairs and Advocacy Director for the American Council of the Blind. And she's going to talk to us about the registry that ACB is setting up to check on, have blind people check in so that we know where they are, and some other things that ACB at a national level is doing to help in disasters like this. But Roger, I was particularly taken with the message that you shared yesterday, and I wonder, I know you're going somewhere and I've got you on your cell phone, but I wonder if you could briefly share that message with our listeners, because I thought it was cogent.
Yes, Marlena, and I'd be happy to. It's a concern that many of us in the public safety sector, specifically law enforcement, have, and that is that in today's world, we're faced with natural disasters, and we're faced with acts of terrorism that can literally paralyze an entire community or devastate the infrastructure of a community so greatly that most of the systems that we take for granted, like electricity and gas and water and sewage systems, all are disabled at the same time, and other acts may occur that will prevent law enforcement and fire service people from moving quickly and easily throughout the community. And why this is so important is that we have with Hurricane Katrina, we have a classic example of a complete total infrastructure collapse of an entire area. That means that infrastructure is down. The power, the water, the sewage systems, transportation systems, food and water delivery systems, all those things that we literally take for granted every day are down, and they're going to stay down for some time. So, and the same thing can happen with an act of terrorism, in that an act of terrorism using chemical, biological, or radiological weapons can basically do the same thing to the infrastructure of an entire area. And when that happens, it may be impossible for public safety personnel to move quickly and easily throughout a community. For instance, if there's a radiological or chemical or biological attack, only a certain few public safety people will have the equipment necessary to get in and help get people out. And that brings us to what we talked about yesterday. And again, I want to thank you for inviting me to meet with you in the South King County Council of the Blind to discuss this and other topics. But there needs to be a system whereby we know where people are or how we can get to people who otherwise would be able to walk out of an area or get out of an area on their own or through public transportation systems, but would be unable to quickly get out if those systems were not available. And that brings us to the topic of how do we know who we need to go in and get out first, and how will we find you?
One of the, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about this since yesterday on the Washington Council of the Blind email list, and I'm very proud of the Washington Council of the Blind because we do really discuss things like this carefully and thoughtfully, and one of the suggestions was that if there were a way to contact a key person, say like on their cell or their BlackBerry or some technology, but would it not be possible that those technologies would be gone as well?
I think it's safe to presume that as in the case of Katrina, as in and also in the case of the World Trade Center, that normal communication systems are going to be down for some period of time and cannot be presumed to be reliable.
And speaking from the perspective of an enforcement officer, what would you like to see people who are blind doing now, today, around the country to address this issue?
Well, it's so important that those people who are going to be the most affected help develop or lead the way in developing a system of notification and communication, because they're best going to know all the limitations to the communication system that they need and all of the requirements. And it must be done nationally. Your point is very well taken in that it must be done nationally. The emphasis now, and has been for the past several years, to standardize all of our practices and procedures for public safety for these major events. In the past, we've done things differently. Law enforcement and fire services have different communication systems. We have different technologies. We have different practices and procedures. And for the past several years, specifically since 9/11 of 01, we have been moving towards a new system which is standardized for all of us all the way across the country. As I'm sure your listeners know by now, we're transporting public safety personnel from different areas of the country into those affected states from the devastation of Katrina. And theoretically, they're going in a seamless fashion. The communication systems are compatible. The policies and procedures are compatible. All of those things, so that they can slip in, and it's transparent for them. They can simply go in and take up action. So that's what needs to be done. This needs to be a national effort on the part of those people who are going to be most impacted to come up with a system, along with public safety and fire from across the country, and developing a system nationally that will allow us and allow you to receive the same level of service wherever we are all across the country.
And I think that's precisely what ACB is beginning to do, and I assure you that I will be back in touch with you for perhaps your perspective and perhaps some thoughts on how we can reach out nationally within the law enforcement community. It's critical. I learned today that we have some 750 members of just our organization, just people who have joined the ACB. We have some 750 members that we know of in the Katrina area, and we've probably heard from 30 of them. So this is a critical thing, and you know, as I said in my promotional announcement, it isn't to be gloom and doom, it's to be smart and really figure out how the heck we can prevent this from happening again. Thank you so much, Roger, for joining us on a Sunday evening on your way to somewhere fun, I hope.
Well, it's a mixture of business and pleasure tonight. The city business goes on 24/7. But thank you for the opportunity to work with you on this, and I really look forward to working with you and your group in the future in helping put this together.
Wonderful. You have a lovely evening, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we are now going to be bringing up Mike Hingson. That was Chief Roger Baker from the Des Moines, Washington Police Department. And we will now bring up, I think Gary the Board Guy has Mike on the line. All right, he's on the line. And now help me make welcome to the Marlena program, as Gary probably will hang up and make that big noise.
Oh, bossy.
I guess he's not going to hang up. Oh, there. We got rid of him now. Mike, it's you and me. Help me make welcome to the Marlena program, a name that many of us know, many of us have known since 4 years ago on this day. Mike Hingson, Mike and his guide dog, Roselle, came evacuated from the World Trade Center. What floor were you on, Mike?
We were on the 78th floor of Tower 1, the first one hit, the North Tower.
78th floor of Tower 1. Welcome to the Marlena program, Mike.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. We've been working on this a while.
I know. We've had lots of email back and forth. and we will open the lines in just a few moments. I will let folks know when the lines are open, but the number to call will be, of course, 866-666-7926. Mike, let me work my way kind of backwards, I guess. How do you feel on the day when September 11th rolls around? How do you wake up?
You know, I wake up remembering that day. I woke up just in time to see the beginning of the ceremonies at Ground Zero. And I keep thinking to myself, who would have thought? You know, who would have thought it even would happen? Who would have thought that we would have had so many things happen since then? And sometimes I think, who would have thought that we wouldn't learn some of the lessons that probably we should learn from it? But how many people survived and what a change there's been in our world, and how much further we have to go. And I think about the people that we lost and feel like I can only celebrate their lives and continue and talk about 9/11 to honor them, because I think we can mourn them with silence and song, but I don't think that these people would want us to mourn. I think they would want us to move on and to be more intelligent about what we do and to act better because of them. And so every September 11th, of course, I think more about that. I've been traveling every September 11th, so I get reminded of it in lots of tangible ways.
I bet. Tell me about that day. And what I'd like to do is hear from you in terms of, I guess, with a blindness perspective, if you will, about how did you get out and what happened?
Well, let me go back just a little bit and say this. I was in the building because I worked there. I was the manager in charge of operations for Quantum Corporation in New York and New Jersey in the Mid-Atlantic region, and so my job was to direct our office and so on. And I knew that as a blind person being a manager, I needed to do the things that other managers did. I needed to act like people would expect them to act. So I needed to know how to get around the World Trade Center. I couldn't walk sighted guide. If we were going to a restaurant, I couldn't walk sighted guide. So I better know New York City. I better know the World Trade Center, and I better know how to get around all over the area. And I spent time doing that. Also, I did it because there would be some times that my sales force would be out and I would be in the office. Sales force is out because their manager wanted them to support him. That's me, and I wanted them to be out earning money for their manager, and so I didn't want them in the office.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'd be in there doing the work that they needed to have done. And so I learned how to function around the World Trade Center. I took the evacuation preparedness courses. I attended the fire drills because I wasn't going to depend on some sighted person. Not that they couldn't do it, but the fact is that they would be relying on signs because most of them don't take the time to read
right.
ahead of time. But more important, I would probably be there alone anyway. And so on 9/11, all that preparation is what paid off. All the preparation of making sure that I was able to do as best I could. I also use a guide dog, and Roselle and I have learned that the most important thing that we can do, and we both learn it, is that we're a team. We work together. The power of partnering makes the whole so much greater than the sum of the parts. And so when the building tipped and it moved about 20 feet and then it came back, it moved an incredible distance. And when that happened, people in my office, we had guests in to do some training, they started yelling, oh, there's fire, and they began panicking. And I was standing there next to Roselle, who had come out from under my desk, and Roselle was not acting like she felt that she or I were in imminent danger. She's sitting there wagging her tail. I told her to sit. She sat. She wasn't nervous. So I drew my ultimate conclusion of how to act from her. I knew there was fire above us because people saw it. There was debris falling outside the windows. They saw it. I heard it. I didn't really smell smoke to any great degree, but there was just a little whiff in the air. But certainly something had happened. The building moved 20 feet. We thought we were going to fall to the street, and then, it didn't. So there was no question about evacuating, but where they drew the conclusion to panic, I drew the conclusion we could evacuate normally because I had trust and faith in Roselle's actions. And Roselle was communicating to me that she felt calm. So I did what was contrary to most people. I got them calmed down. I got them out. And after our guests were gone, then and only then did I leave.
Wow.
So as a blind person, it was all about being prepared. And I had to take responsibility for that, as we all do. We can't rely on other people to do it. And at the same time, as a blind person, I insisted that I have the information necessary to do that. And it's kind of interesting because after 9/11, a lot of people started talking about whether disabled people should be allowed to work in floors above the first floor in New York City. And my response to that was, you got to do that. You pass a law that says that there will be no buildings that go higher than the first floor. How dare you consider denying disabled people, denying blind people, the opportunity to work along with our sighted colleagues? How arrogant and how totally inappropriate. And the bottom line is that they fortunately didn't do that.
Yeah, it's amazing that we do tend as a society to put a Band-Aid on an issue rather than look at the issue. Are we providing people with disabilities the kind of evacuation information that they need? And are we with disabilities taking advantage of that which is provided to us?
We are a society of quick fixes and simple answers, and that's not just in this country. We want immediate answers, and the biggest one is ignored, and it will probably go away. And we want quick fixes. We're not willing to be into it for the long haul. And the biggest evidence of that is, of course, a lot of what happened with Hurricane Katrina. But it's also what happened on 9/11. We didn't deal with a lot of what we needed to understand the Islamic way of life, to understand that these things were happening. I'm not convinced that we would have connected the dots, no matter how much we knew, unless we had a source that told us when and what was going to happen. I think we could have known more than we did, but I'm not ready to say we would have connected all the dots. We certainly could have connected a lot of dots. But I think that we like quick fixes and simple answers, and it's up to us to change that. We in the disabled community know full well the value of working together and partnering and how much we can accomplish if we work together to not deal with the quick fix but the long haul. But there's so many people that won't do that. Our government thinks they're going to have a quick fix to rehabilitation by just combining agencies, and they're causing some problems there. But the fact is that what we need to do is to work together, recognize that there are not quick fixes to what happened on 9/11, now that it has happened, to work forward in dealing with Katrina now that it has happened, and most of all, decide that we're not going to allow this to happen again by saying to our elected representatives, we are in it for the long haul, there are tough decisions to be made, and we expect you to make tough decisions in partnership with us, the people you serve, or we'll find someone else to do it.
The telephone number to call, the line is open, is 866-666-7926.
And I should say, what I'm saying about the government is not one administration, that's a general statement, political-wide.
Sure. Sure. Tell me, Mike, and I'm sure you've been asked this question. In fact, I think I saw Larry King once ask you this question. How has 9/11 changed your life?
Gosh, in one sense, it made me value family more. It certainly changed it because instead of working in the computer world, I decided to change careers because of all the media attention we had, and I now work for Guide Dogs for the Blind, helping to work with donors, but educating people about blindness, about guide dogs. I made the decision to take all the press interviews and to join Guide Dogs because we made my speaking, my motivational speaking and the things that I do traveling around the country, we made that part of my job. And if it helps people understand blindness and that blindness isn't the handicap, our attitudes are, if it helps people do more to support guide dogs, then, and of course I'm prejudiced toward Guide Dogs for the Blind, but I've spoken and worked with other guide dog schools to help them raise funds. So if it helps that, and if it helps people learn to move on from 9/11 and recognize that we have a different normal today, then it's worth doing.
Let's bring a caller in. Hello, caller. You're with Marlena and Mike Hingson. Who's this?
This is Butch Arnold.
Hello, Butch. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Say hello to Mike Hingson.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Butch.
As a visually impaired person, I'm damn proud of you. You did
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
Now, you did what we're trying to encourage people to do. You prepared yourself. The comments you made in the beginning showed that you knew that you couldn't depend on anybody else, that you had to be prepared for whatever would happen.
You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that's what people have to do today. They've got a plan for when something out of the norm happens. They don't have to panic and think what to do. They just automatically go ahead and do it.
You know, once I was in New York, and it was before 9/11 even, and we were walking down a street. There were several of us. I had a couple of my employees who have been very well educated about blindness and developed good respect for me, and I developed good respect for their abilities. So we were walking with a couple of customers, and this woman came walking down the street, not paying attention, talking on her cell phone, and Roselle tried to avoid her but couldn't, and we crashed into each other. And the woman yelled at one of my employees saying, well, aren't you his keeper? You should make sure that he doesn't bump into me. And my employee said, what are you talking about? You weren't watching where you were going. And I said, you know, let me put it to you this way, ma'am. That guy is my employee, and if you think he's my keeper, if he starts telling me what I'm supposed to do while walking down the street, since I'm paying attention, I guarantee you he's going to be fired because he's not my keeper. I tend to be his paymaster, and you didn't pay attention. My dog tried to get around you. You know, people have such funny perceptions, but it is all about preparation. And I knew that the only way I could get customers to respect me and to get my employees to respect me and for me to have self-respect at all was to be prepared.
Butch, oh, dear, I'm getting a terrible echo on here. I hope you guys aren't getting it. But, Butch, you sent me a very interesting email about what you folks are doing in Baltimore. Would you like to share some of that?
Yeah, the Baltimore City Mayor's Commission on Disabilities, which I'm a commissioner on, and the Governor's Office on Disabilities is putting together a comprehensive emergency plan for people with disabilities. And we're actually holding a huge forum October 27th that's open to not only disabled but the public to try to encourage people to make plans now, to network, do things such as the registry so that people will have a central place to call in their friends or a group of people, have somebody at a key point so that they can communicate. If they need assistance, it can be gotten for them. And we've noticed that with a lot of the building plans for evacuations, especially with nursing homes, all the nursing homes have great plans in place because it's the law here now that they have to. But we discovered that they were all contracting ambulances with one ambulance company.
Oh, gosh, that's not so smart.
Well, nobody realized it. The ambulance company was doing these long-term contracts, and they didn't realize that that was covering emergencies, too. And the same thing is true with our mobility buses. We have all these lift-equipped buses that are running the route, and the fire department thought, well, we can just take the buses off the routes and use them. And we quickly pointed out that that's going to stop the people that are depending on them to get out. So we're making arrangements to get other vehicles on standby and building a resource-based database so that all these necessary functions are met at a time of need.
Well, if you would keep me up to date with that, Butch. I would love to bring you back on for periodic updates, how it's going, maybe tips that you can give people as they begin to reach out into their respective communities around the country and around the world.
Butch, if I can help with that, email me at mhinkson@guidedogs.com.
Okay, one thing that you're setting an example, Mike, and I think all the listeners tonight should really pay attention to that. You were prepared yourself. You weren't waiting around for somebody else, and that's the key. Know your surroundings, know your resources, and don't depend on them coming to you. Be prepared to go to them.
That makes perfect sense, whether it's for emergencies or anything, because I wasn't thinking about an emergency. I was thinking about me and Roselle, very frankly, and who would have thought we would have ever had this kind of thing happen on 9/11? But it's all about, it's what we need to do to perform and be viewed as people who are capable of being in society. We've got to take responsibility for that.
My grandfather was visually impaired, and he passed on through the generations to me that a handicapped person has to do better than the average person to be treated as an average person. And when it comes to emergencies, you certainly were more prepared to handle it than the average person. And because of that, you were able to assist other people in getting out by setting the example.
Thank you. I think that did happen.
I know it did because it was on the news.
Thanks, right. Butch. Thanks so much for calling.
Okay.
Okay, have a good evening.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay.
Thank you.
866-666-7926. My little VOIP line is giving me a little echoey sound here. Hopefully that'll be all right. We've got another caller. Hello there. You're with Mike Hinkson and Marlena. Who is this, please?
This is Amy Rule.
Hello, Amy Rule. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Terrific.
Amy, we miss your service.
Oh, thank you. How are you, Mike? Nice to finally meet
well.
You at least over the phone.
At long last.
One of the things that this discussion has made me think a lot about is the situation we have in our education system with young blind and visually impaired children. I, in my capacity working at National Braille Press, I have the opportunity to talk to teachers and parents throughout the country. And one of the things that I think has changed from the dark ages when I went to school is that in many instances and in many school districts, sometimes teachers that are visually impaired or parents have to fight for their children to have the opportunities to be independent. The school systems today are so concerned about liability and would prefer, rather than provide the instruction that's necessary for children to truly be independent, they have them rely on aides or on their peers or on a separate and, in my view, quite unequal system. Yeah. And with so many potential tragedies and terrorist threats, and I think of Columbine and all these things happening that could potentially impact our children. I'm wondering if you've given any thought or if you know of any kind of initiative that brings the kind of example and education that you're talking about to the blind and visually impaired children throughout the country.
Great question.
Well, I know at Guide Dogs we have a program called At a Glance, which is to try to educate school kids in general a little bit more about blindness and guide dogs. But as far as blind people, I think that the most that's been done has been through, like, parents' organizations of dealing with the blind and disabled, whether it be what NAPI and someone are doing, and some of the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children, which is, you know, another organization from ACB. But I think something else that I think we should all consider, and it's something that I talked about with Bob Phillips, the president and CEO of Guide Dogs, this weekend and this past week. Bob and I went to Korea, and Bob made a very interesting observation to me on the airplane as we were flying back. He said, one of the things that we really need to do as disabled people and as organizations dealing with blind people specifically is to try to develop ways to show the society and the people with whom we work the advantages that we bring, or the advantages of our ways of doing things, helping to build a community. So, for example, me being prepared, the things that I did, the techniques that I used to function even in a building where there might be smoke. What are the advantages of teaching some of those kinds of things to other people? Well, the advantages are, what if you can't read the signs because there's smoke? Or the fact that if you have other ways of doing part of what you need to do in an emergency, you might feel a little bit more confident because you don't see in a case of a smoke-filled room, or whatever example you want to use, but that we need to we need to develop ways of showing people the advantage of what we bring to the party, if you will.
I agree.
And I think that that's something that's very fascinating. Don't just say, well, it should be this way because it's the law or we need to make it, but rather create acceptance by showing people it's valuable. It's like children who learn sign language before they learn to speak tend to learn to communicate well. They start interacting with people. They become more developed. My father-in-law, who was the director of one of the three diagnostic schools in Southern California, or in California, was using sign language with developmentally disabled kids back in the 60s and 70s, and found that since they couldn't speak, he was able to develop ways of communicating and bringing these kids a lot further along. We could do that with young children, and it's been proven scientifically that children, before they learn to speak, if they learn sign language, do learn to communicate and have better developmental lives. I mean, so the advantage of teaching sign language is something that's advantageous to everyone. There are so many things that we could teach people. Should all kids learn Braille? Well, maybe not, but they could learn more about the value of touch, the value of looking at things without seeing, how helpful it would be to them. When we're on an airplane, people say, well, you can follow the floor lighting systems to the exit. And
right.
The odds are those will work. But, you know, the fact is, who the heck knows? And I know that there have been situations where aircraft have been smoke-filled, and the flight attendants panicked, and the passengers developed communication systems. There are things that we can teach, and we need to be the teachers.
And I think to do that, the hurdle that I think we also need to overcome is we have to redefine these skills in a way that make them seem normal and attainable and not amazing. I think one of the biggest problems we face is that when blind people show that they are competent and do normal things in different ways, unfortunately, the reaction of many people in the sighted public is that this is an amazing thing that you can do this. And in reality, that's not the situation at all. What you remind me of, and I'm going to show my age here, is when we had the blackout of 19, I believe it was 65.
Oh, yes, I remember it well.
And
yes.
I think I was in fifth grade at the time, and I was attending. I was reading Johnny Tremaine with a sighted friend of mine, and and the lights went out, and she was frightened because we were at my house, and she was frightened because the lights all went out, and I was able to navigate to her house with her, bringing her with me, and you know, everybody else. She was the eldest of five, and everybody else in her house was pretty anxious, and I told them all ghost stories because it didn't bother me a bit.
Yeah.
And somehow it's amazing that I could navigate to her home, which is only two blocks away. And really, it just relied on different cues.
One of my favorite stories was reading about how there was a group of people down in the subway, and it was dark, and all of a sudden they heard somebody dialing a telephone, and here was a blind guy calling saying, I'm going to be late. And that person ended up dialing the phone for everyone and so on. The fact is that people think it's amazing, and we can establish the connections to help them understand it's not. It's learning an alternative technique, and that learning that technique or learning how to use that technique in your own life might very well be beneficial to you.
Right. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you
very much. Have a wonderful night.
Good to meet you, Amy.
Nice to meet you.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Mike can only stay with us till the top of the hour, and we have another call. So what we're gonna try to do is ask people to ask their question, and then we'll free up the line so that Mike can give his answer. Hi there. You're with Mike Hingson and Marlena. Who is this?
Hi, Marlena. It's Pam Drake in Visalia.
Hello, Pam Drake. How are you, and how is Dave?
Oh, he's fine. I'm fine. We're all fine.
Great.
I was curious. First of all, was there a subway or grating or even a manhole that this woman looked into or tried to jump into to disappear after that?
Oh, after she said to that somebody was Mike's keeper?
Yes.
No, she didn't get it.
She didn't get it.
Unfortunately, she just didn't get it.
Probably wouldn't have admitted it if she had.
Wow.
Anyway, what I was wanting to ask, well, a couple of, first of all.
There was a subway grating, by the way.
but it didn't open up and swallow her.
Yeah.
No.
Anyway, what I was going to ask was, have there been any long-term effects on, well, obviously you think of it every day, but Roselle, she sounds like you probably already answered my question.
She's doing well. She has a blood disorder, which no one can attribute to 9/11, but she has a situation where her platelet count drops, which means that if the platelet count goes too low, the blood won't coagulate.
Mm.
No one can attribute it to 9/11. She's part of the University of Pennsylvania dog study, which is now in its fourth year.
Good place.
But it's something that could be caused from toxins. It's not caused from all the usual things like cancer and so on. So my belief is it's 9/11 related, but there's nothing scientific to say that. But she's doing well, no long-term psychological things, because the neat thing about dogs is they don't do what if.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
And did you have another question, Pam?
Yes, well, I wanted to tell you something.
All right.
Just recently we flew from Visalia to Philadelphia, and I think it was...
Which airport?
Yes.
Which airport?
Well, we flew to Bakersfield. Went to Bakersfield because it was cheap, much cheaper than trying to fly through Fresno.
Yeah.
But a couple of times there and again going to and from Vegas, we were told, well, now just wait until everyone's off the plane.
Yeah.
And we said, right.
Go ahead.
We didn't exactly say that, but we said no. We said we're going. We're okay. We'll move. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to get yelled at again.
All right.
A lot of times they won't listen to you, but sometimes I try to interact with people. They always want to put me in the bulkhead, and I point out to people that there's this conception that there's so much more room for the dog
that we want you
to go in the bulkhead.
And in fact,
you know, there's lots of room under the seats. But what I try to tell people, if they will take the time to listen, is, look, you go on the aircraft. The first thing you say in the briefing is if you have purses or luggage and you're sitting in a bulkhead row, you have to put it overhead. You can't leave it on the floor. I say, but you'll allow a dog to be on the floor. And what's to prevent that dog from flying around? The most dangerous seat for a blind person with a guide dog, it's a bulkhead.
You betcha.
And I recognize that there's some people say, but it's better for our dog, and I want my dog to be in the bulkhead, and it's kind of crowded under those seats. Those dogs, most every dog, when I really sit down and get guide dog trainers to think about it, even they admit it, although no one is really moving to push the non-bulkhead thing, they offer the training. But the fact is that bulkhead seats are the most dangerous seats for guide dogs. I've been saying that.
Yep.
After being a traveler for 41 years with a guide dog,
yep.
I always fly a non-bulkhead seat.
So
the dog goes under the seat in front. I like to sit by the window. She's got plenty of room. She sleeps, and she still gets to flirt.
And we have a caller. Hi there. You're with Mike Hinkson and Marlena. Who is this?
Hello, this is Timothy Uppley.
Hello, Timothy, up in Nova Scotia.
Yes, sir.
And what's your question for Mike?
I just wanted to say thank you for your inspirational little game that you made with your dog. Very good.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and to hear from you. And we just do what we can do to continue to move forward and try to help others do the same thing.
That's great. 866-666-7926. We will have Mike for just about 15 more minutes. And I'm just delighted to have you on the show. And obviously so are the callers, because we have another call.
We have another call.
Hi there. You're with Mike Hinkson and Marlena. Who is this? Hello? Okay. Well, I guess we...
substantive.
That was the sign language call. We'll try it again. Hi there, you're with Mike Hinkson and Marlena. Who is this?
My name's Tom Ayotte.
Hi, Tom?
Yes.
Yes. Say hello to Mike Hinkson.
How you doing, Mike?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Real good. Hey, I got a question for you. I don't know if it's totally pertaining to the subject, but I got a thing called an Ergo Brailler. It's a piece of
art. Uh-huh.
It was by Artic back in the old days.
Right.
Ah, yes.
Right.
And I spilled pop in it. And it doesn't work no more.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm not sure that we know too much about that tonight, actually.
I know you got a lot of listeners.
Yeah.
And I'd like to get it fixed. Artic doesn't exist no more.
No, they're gone. They're gone. Put a fork in them. They're done.
I just say that there are a number of listservs dealing with blindness technologies and so on.
Yeah.
And I don't know who, if anyone, services them, but I put some announcements out on listservs and see what kind of responses you get, because I found a lot of people who have gotten information about repairing old equipment from some of those.
And the other thing, Tom, if you want to give out your email, if anyone's listening, and this replays and it podcasts and it goes on in perpetuity here, so if you want to give out your email, maybe somebody can get hold of you.
Sure, you don't mind.
Go for it, my dear.
I don't know what the total subject was tonight. I do apologize.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
We're flexible.
Oh, that's good to hear.
That's right.
Like I said, my Ergo, it worked great until I spilled pop in it. And it's,
what's your email address?
You know, they got the fancy ones out there.
Yeah.
But this is, just about the size of your palm of your hand.
Yeah.
Very basic.
Yeah.
And,
well, why don't you go ahead and give us your email address?
All right, I'll do it slowly. It's T as in Tom, AYOTT, the number 2, at Ameritech, which is AmeriTech.net.
All right, great. Thanks, Tom, and good luck.
I hope you don't mind me calling, and I hope I didn't interrupt.
I hope you'll call me anytime.
Hope you get it fixed.
All right.
Yeah, I hope I do too. You know, I do miss it. Yeah.
All right, take care, Tom.
All right, thank you.
Night. 866-666-7926. And we have another caller. Hi there, you're with Mike Hingson and Marlena. Who is this?
Hi, good evening. My name is Carlos Montes from Tallahassee. It's a pleasure to speak to you, Mike, and Marlena. I've called your show.
Yes, you have, Carlos.
Hey, Carlos, how are you?
Good, good. Just a couple of questions for you, Mike. First of all, have you heard anything about any movement on the Air Carrier Access Act? There was talk about dogs in the bulkhead seats and that kind of thing. Have you heard anything?
Well, there's a lot of discussion about it. I think that it's still up in the air as to what's going to happen with that. There are proposed rules in effect right now, and I think that at this point no one has made any decisions. I think that there are proposed rules that are out there, and I think that right now the government has gotten all the comments that they're going to get, and we're kind of waiting to see. But there's always the opportunity to continue to write to your congressman and tell them to talk to the Department of Transportation. I'd still continue to email the Department of Transportation and do whatever to get them to consider positions. I think the official rulemaking comment period is over, but I don't think anyone should stop writing to keep our views going in that say don't go off and mess up the rights of blind people with guide dogs to travel on airplanes.
Yeah.
Sure. The other question is,
definitely call your congressman, definitely involve your legislators in it, and get your state and federal people and even local people to comment to the Department of Transportation.
Sure. The other issue is, I'm a guide dog user, and I have I've had some issues with the Transportation Security Administration with issues of mistreatment, lack of training on the part of the TSA employees, and I know we've tried to do some in-services here in Tallahassee and in some other airports that I travel to. What's been your experience, and I guess, and what kinds of things do you think guide dog users can do in those situations? Like they'll try to take your dog from you and that kind of thing.
Okay, and I'm going to hang up and let Mike give you an answer because I know we're stacked up with callers. All right, Carlos?
Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right, Mike.
There are specific rules as far as blind people going through security, and what the security people, what the TSA regulations now say is that they cannot separate you from your dog. I can tell you what I do to walk through. The issue is whether you set off the detector or whether the dog sets off the detector. When I go up to a security area, I take off my shoes like they want people to do. I take all metal out of my pockets, and I actually put it in my briefcase so that I don't have any of that stuff, and I do that ahead of time. Before I do it at the table, but I put it all in the briefcase away from coach where it can spill. And then I put things in the buckets and so on, take my shoes off, put them in the buckets. I put the dog on a long leash when I get right up to the security portal. I tell my dog to sit, and then I tell the security people, I am going to walk through. The dog will stay on a long leash, and after I go through, when you see that I don't set the detector off, then I will call the dog. And I have to train Roselle to stay there and wait until I call her, which is what she's supposed to do anyway. So I walk through, and I'll usually grab the hand of the security person on the other side to make sure that I don't touch the sides of the portal, because that will make it ring. I go through, and today, with the rules as they sit today, if I don't set it off, they are not supposed to search me.
Yeah.
And then when the dog comes through, if the dog sets it off, then they will search the dog. Well, Roselle loves to get searched.
Yeah, so does Madeline.
Yeah, I mean, it's important.
Like, yahoo! I'll just quickly jump in, because we do have a caller, but I'll quickly jump in and tell you what I do, because, you know, Madeline and I have traveled huge amounts, and she's now in here squeaking a toy on command.
Yeah.
I actually remove her harness and leash, and in its place, I have a nylon collar leash with absolutely no metal, no nothing, no anything on it. And like you, I put everything in the briefcase, not in the pockets, not in the buckets, but in the briefcase, and I take the hand of the security person on the other side of the detector, just as you do. But she and I walk through together, and she's completely demetalled, and her harness is usually right there waiting for us at the end. So two different ways to solve the problem.
And there's no one answer.
But
the point is that as long as you don't set it off,
that's right,
they are not supposed to do anything to you.
That's right. Let's bring our caller in. Hello there. You're with Mike Hinkson and Marlena. Who is this?
Don't be so formal. It's Frank Casey.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Frank Casey up in Albany, New York. Where the heck have you been?
Well, let me tell you something. I'm a bad boy. I got in late. I've been promoting this thing all day, but I got eating the Schwann's pie a la mode, and I got late. But what I wanted to comment is I'm not a guide dog user, okay? I'm a cane user. I've not had any major problems with the airlines, so I'm not going to, you know, belabor the point. But what I wanted to mention is that I was very disturbed today. We had a commemorative memorial for the 9/11
right.
Tragedy in Albany, New York, the state capitol, and only about 200 people showed up. And it's really sad that 4 years later, people are forgetting so quickly.
Yeah.
And I really think it's a shame. I've heard some people say, well, you know, there are other people who have had problems, but it's not every day when you lose 2,800 people.
No.
But it's not every day when we are attacked like we are, and it's not every day when we have the opportunity to learn some lessons.
Exactly.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's so unfortunate that so many people are trying to get back to normal. And one of the things that angered me after 9/11 is people kept saying, you got to get back to normal. Excuse me, normal will never be the same again.
Yeah.
We have to find our own different normals. And you're right, they're forgetting all too quickly rather than learning. It gets back to what I said earlier. We're always into quick fixes and simple answers, and it doesn't work that way.
9/11 changed America forever. I mean, I was in emergency services for 32 years, and I'll tell you, it broke my heart because of the fact that some maniacs can come over here and, I mean, they upturned people's lives forever.
It changed the world. It isn't just America. And the fact is, what are we as a people, not just Americans, but what are we, the world, going to do about it? And until we collectively say this is unacceptable behavior and across the board say we're not going to tolerate it anymore, then it's going to continue.
I wonder, and maybe this has been touched on, Mike, but have we really learned? I mean, I like your opinion on that. If you've already given it, I apologize, but have we really learned in America or the world anything from the moment?
I guess the best answer is we're learning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you got other people. Marlena, thanks for bringing Mike on tonight.
Well, and hopefully we'll get him back again because we are. I'm even getting people calling me on my home number saying,
oh,
I can't get through, I can't get through.
Well, we'll have to do this and spend a whole few hours at it.
Yes, absolutely. Frank, give my best to Kathy.
I sure will.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mike, we've only got about 4 more minutes
right
here, and I know you need to go, so we're going to ask our callers to kind of hold off, and we will bring you back. Before we kind of wrap, though, could you give your email address? That was one of the requests.
Sure. I am at mhingson@guidedogs.com. That's M-H-I-N like Nancy, G like George, S like Sam, O-N like Nancy, mhingson@guidedogs.com. It may take me a couple days to answer emails as I travel and so on, but have laptop, do travel, and I will answer emails. Would love people to email, and we'll interact and do best we can. So mhingson@guidedogs.com, or they can call me at 415-492-4177. That's a direct dial, 415-492-4177. Last phone number, there is an 800 number for guide dogs. It's 800-295-4050, and then it's extension 4177.
And I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to very quickly tell the audience what Guide Dogs for the Blind is doing for the guide dog victims of Katrina.
The board of directors at Guide Dogs has voted to support efforts to help blind people through any agencies that we can in Louisiana and elsewhere. And so the board has voted to match any donations up to a total of $25,000. So if there are people out there who want to donate to help blind people who have been involved with Katrina, they can make donations to Guide Dogs for the Blind and write on the check, make the check to Guide Dogs and mark on it for Hurricane Katrina relief effort. And Guide Dogs is matching that. And I hope other guide dog schools and other agencies who can do so will develop similar programs.
Mike Hingson, thank you so much for all that you do and for who you are. And give that little Roselle girl a big hug from me.
I will. She gets some more bones tonight. And when you want me to come, Mom, we'll do it again. Let's talk this week and plot.
Absolutely. I'm into plotting. Thanks,
cool.
Mike.
Thanks, Marlene.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Whether it's our guide dog who's leading us home out of the World Trade Center, our cane skills, our intuition, we need to turn inward to find those skills and make sure that we have them honed and ready to deal with whatever we may need to deal with. I'd like to welcome now someone that I have just recently met this past winter and spent a thoroughly enjoyable evening sitting next to her at the Capitol Steps in D.C., where we listened to the Capitol Steps in their great humor, and also spent an afternoon with her where she gave a fabulous presentation at the ACB President's Meeting. Day Al-Mohammed, who is the Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs for ACB. Hey, Day, welcome to Marlena.
Hi, Marlena. Thank you very much for having me. I have to admit, I'm really kind of excited about it.
Well, so am I. Your enthusiasm is contagious. I was very struck by a post that you made on the ACB leaders list, on the leadership list, that talked about what ACB is doing and kind of how people can get involved and what people need to do. Let me just stop talking and let you pick this thing up and share a bit about that with our listeners.
Okay, let me hope I can try and keep stuff in a nice organized manner. As some of you may know, I want to like just run on miles ahead and let my mouth get carried away.
Oh, and as if I never do that. Oh, no, I never do that. Never.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad I'm not alone then. I think one of the things that struck me, and I think has struck everybody, is just the amount of devastation from Hurricane Katrina. And I know that a lot of us have been shocked, and at the same time we're frustrated and angry with some of the responses, and we want to know what we can do to make things better. And I think we've all felt that, and in some ways some of us are still struggling to find a good way to express that. And I think one of the things is to plan. One of the biggest things that I wanted to speak about in my plan was not just about what we can do to help the people suffering now, but what we can do to make sure that when this happens again, because something like it, whether it's an earthquake or a tornado or a hurricane or, you know, God forbid, another terrorist attack, that we as individuals with disabilities are active and within our local community's emergency preparedness plans and know what to do. For this current recurrence, right now, it's, you know, we say let's be prepared before, during, and after. We are now caught in the after and are, in a way, not just ACB, but so many organizations, governmental, private, advocacy, are struggling because the infrastructure isn't there on what do we do? How do we make sure aid gets where it needs to? How do we make sure that people get out? One of the things that kind of struck me, that what we were looking at the national office in the last couple weeks, I have to admit my department got caught up with, the one thing we do is governmental affairs. One thing we do is we do lobbying, we do advocacy. And so when we heard about what was going on, what works for us is going, okay, what are these people going to need? Well, how many people are on SSI? Well, we need to make sure that their checks are going to get to them no matter what. So we started like pushing with the Social Security Administration. What are you doing about this? Medicaid, how many, you know, we have so many of our members who use Medicaid, so many just general people who use it, and how many more are going to need it. And one of the biggest things we came across is Louisiana Medicaid cards, Mississippi Medicaid cards are not good in any other state.
Oh, so if they evacuated to Houston, they're
it
no good.
Work.
Wow.
Right. And one of the things we were really pleased with is the Department of Health and Human Services was very responsive when we with a bunch of other disability groups got together and talked, said, hey, you need to do something about this. And I believe it was Michael Levitt, who's the head there, said, we'll take care of it, and created a waiver so people can use those. Because you go to another state, those pharmacies and doctors weren't accepting them. And I currently we're having a few issues with them because right now one of the requirements that, at least that I've heard, I have to look it up specifically myself, is that you have to have 3 months' worth of bank statements. I'm like, that's kind of hard to do if your bank's underwater.
Yeah, or your house is underwater.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they asked, you know, what can they do? And they asked our department, use what political muscle you have to keep disability issues on the forefront, because we were the ones, in a way, who were hit the hardest because so many of us could not get out. The transportation issue becomes a problem.
What do people do? What do people do when you need to evacuate and there's no bus?
Exactly. And what happens is normally one of the things about the way FEMA was constructed and some of the other things, particularly after 9/11, were created were local emergency management teams. Like there's a community emergency response team. It's a CERT program is what they call it. And it educates people about disaster preparedness and trains them in basic disaster response skills. And what it is you can help people in your neighborhood and workplace following event, and you take an active role in preparing your community so things like transportation are something that is accounted for.
And let me also give out the number. It's 866-666-7926. Is this CERT in any way parallel to kind of in the law enforcement world, like a neighborhood watch? I mean, can you?
Actually, it's very similar. In fact, what it is it's part of the Citizen Corps. What it is, you know, after September 11, 2000, there was a big, this wellspring of selflessness and heroism, and people everywhere across the country said, what can I do? How can I help? And what it is this was kind of created as a way to answer some of those questions and to help people with public education, outreach, training, service. And the Neighborhood Watch Program, which in a way is funded by the DOJ, is one of the organizations and one of the partners as a part of the Citizen Corps program. And I think one of the things as far as future planning would go for us as blind people to see, let's get involved in this, because it does come down to the local level. As much as I'd like to say that we're running and working on governmental stuff here at the federal level, and that there is a federal interagency council that's working on emergency preparedness, a lot of it isn't necessarily trickling down to the state and local level. And a lot of times at the local level is where, because it's so specific to your community, is where we need to be involved as individuals. We need to step up to the plate. And the thing is, I know there are people who have started doing that and are excited about doing that. Police departments, paramedics, fire departments want to hear from us. They want to know, what can I do? And part of it is, if we're talking to them ahead of time, particularly about issues like transportation, then they can help us together come up with creative solutions to answer those questions before they have to do it for real.
In the beginning of the first hour, we had for a very short visit Chief Roger Baker from the Des Moines, Washington Police Department. And he put forth a plea. He said, please help us. Please contact your local enforcement authority. One of the things that he shared yesterday in a brief talk that he gave is that you should not expect that you're going to get help for 72 hours.
Yes.
That you should totally not believe that help of any sort is going to come to you unless it's help that you yourself have worked out and pre-planned for. And that's a sobering thought.
It is. It's very scary. But, you know, and also at the same time, your first option and plan should be family and friends. They can accommodate us. They can accommodate our pets. They can help us be more comfortable in something that's very stressful. They know us and they know how we operate. And I think that's one of the ways I was looking at things is if you think about it like a set of concentric rings, the centermost ring would be us as the individual. Okay, what can I do? And one of those, they say, is have a disaster kit. And that could be easy as a 3-day supply of non-perishable food. With a can opener, so it was a good idea, and a 3-day supply of water. You know, the battery-powered radio and a flashlight with extra batteries. Well, it doesn't matter so much for some of us who are visually impaired.
But the dogs might like it.
There we go. But some simple things like hand sanitizer or a roll of toilet paper along with that. You know, dog supplies are very good if you have a service animal. And just put that aside. Put it, you know, those. You need about a gallon of water per person per day. You know, put them in a container. you know, stuff them behind your couch.
Sure.
Put them there, forget about them.
We,
you know, have photocopies of your ID, credit cards. That way, that, you know, that first ring, you've taken care of yourself. Step
sure,
two,
sure.
You know,
let me stop you at the first ring. We have a caller.
Uh-huh.
Hi there, you're with Day and Marlena. Who is this?
Hello, Marlena, this is Stan.
Oh, Mitchell. Stan, the man from Medford, Oregon.
Well, you know, it's interesting because listening to her talk and then thinking, as I think a lot of us have done, about the events of the past few weeks with Hurricane Katrina, and it makes me think, Mohammed's notification, because she does, you know this, Marlena, because we've talked, but I'm on the Rogue Valley Transportation District Board, which is a transportation district here in Oregon. And I think maybe this is something that we may even have to discuss in our Board of Transportation meetings.
Yeah, sure.
What kind of precautions?
Sure, yeah.
That is excellent. Particularly for some of our senior citizens who are visually impaired.
Exactly.
This kind of transportation is important. So I think that's the perfect opportunity.
Because we have a service here, which is a paratransit service called Valley Lift, which helps out with a lot of the transportation needs of the blind and senior citizens, as well as TransLink for medical rides. So I think that maybe this is something that I need to be pushing to be on the agenda, at least at one of our meetings, so that this kind of plan, because no one knows what kind of thing can happen, whether it's some sort of a chemical plant problem or a multitude of things we haven't even thought of yet.
When I listened to the chief speak yesterday, he said, it isn't if we have another disaster, it is when. And it isn't if we have another terror attack, it's when. And it may not be for 10 years or 5 or 20, but it will be, and we need to be prepared.
But it may not be, but I think that there's a false sense of complacency,
yeah.
Because if you have something, it's not necessarily going to be confined to something like, say, the San Francisco Bay Area of California,
right.
Or Los Angeles or New York or, insert. I mean, we don't know.
That's right. We don't
right.
know.
And it also isn't just that area. I think, one of the things I just learned today is it's not going to affect just those states. Texas now has 250,000 new people who have come in who need help. That's a huge jump in the population. I mean, and, how many states can handle that kind of an influx? About the San Francisco Bay Area and a million people shift suddenly in Oregon.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think that these are things that all of us can kind of wake up and think about, because we don't know. And fortunately, I think that we can start discussing these things in advance, and maybe we'll be a little bit more prepared for the future.
Well, thanks, Stan. Let me know how
sure.
it goes with your transit board there, and we may do some partnering with Washington and Oregon.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Oh, sure. I'll be more than happy to keep you apprised of that.
All right. Let me know.
Sure.
Have
All
a good
right.
night. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Okay, so, we have another call. Let's bring them right on in. Hi there. You're with Day and Marlena. Who is this? Hello?
Oh, I guess that would be me. This is Gina Lewis in Seattle.
Hi there, Gina.
Hello. I have a question to ask about, emergency preparedness and in general.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. I hear all the time that if you're in an emergency situation and so on and so forth, that if the power's out, you need to have a battery-operated radio or a wind-up radio that doesn't require batteries.
Right.
So if the power's out, then how can we expect the radio stations to be on the air so that we can know what's going on in the first place?
Oh, because most of them have emergency generators. And so they may be down, but they're probably down for 30 seconds or a minute. I think it's an FCC requirement, and Gary, the board guy, can holler in here and tell me if he knows if that's true. But I believe it's an FCC requirement that your mainstream, main market commercial radio stations have to have backup power. in the event of an emergency in order to keep their license.
Oh, okay.
All right?
Okay, then.
All right. So
well, thank you.
Great question, and thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Lots of things to think about. So let's go to ring two of being prepared.
Yes, ring two. Ring one is talking about, like, a disaster kit and getting equipment and supplies ready. Ring two would be the plan for you and your family should something happen. And part of that is... we'll make sure everybody knows what that plan is, and not just for your home. I think one of the things that struck me very hard was when I was away at a conference. I was in a hotel, and they had a fire alarm. Where's the nearest exit? You know, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And that also works in your job. Where's the nearest exit?
Well, and in a hotel, too.
Oh, yeah. It was rather fun trying to find that. So,
I mean, how many of us, and I include myself in this, how many of us go to a hotel for a convention? How many of us, when we went to Las Vegas, said, oh, and by the way, where's the fire exit? I mean, mm-hmm. I bet 10 of us did it. I didn't do it. Well, it's all, earlier before you came on, Mike Hingson talked very cogently about the only reason that he survived is because he knew that route backwards and forwards and upside down throughout the World Trade Center and the streets around the World Trade Center, and he knew exactly where to go and exactly where he'd end up if he made it to where he needed to go. And you know, that's critical.
Right. And part of that plan is, you know, should you need to go somewhere, if I'm at work, I need to know where's going to be the next place of safety if we have to evacuate. Or I need to know what is the place of safety in the building. Should it be something like a tornado? You know, normally the idea is you go to the basement. You know, or what happens to my child who's at school if something happens. One of the other things as a part of that outside is if there is a chance that people are going to be separated, then every member of the family should know an out-of-state contact name and phone number, someone they can contact and say, hey, I'm okay, here I am. And over and over, I think that's been one of the difficult things, especially after Hurricane Katrina, when some families ended up split across multiple states and trying to contact each other and find each other. Having a single out-of-state contact point helps. And that's actually one of the things that I know that we're trying to do, and we just started here at the national office, and we're trying to set up. Because Sharon went through our membership roster, and we listed, and I'm not familiar with membership numbers, but she listed over 600 ACB members alone from affected states. And we've been hearing people going, I'm okay, I'm okay. I said, well, I can think of maybe two dozen or so of those messages on lists. I said, but that's out of 600. And so we're asking people, I said, we have that 800 number, we have an inbox, call in, say, this is my name, this is where I am, a contact number, you know, and if you need anything, let us know, because then we can send the word to whatever the nearest chapter or affiliate is to get any kind of assistance you might need. But at least this way we can start to account for people. I mean, that has been the biggest problem with any organization and any people. How do you account for people? Where are they?
What is the number that they would call, Dave?
Our ACB national office number?
800-424-8666.
That's it.
I've known that number for probably more years than I should admit to, so I just wasn't sure if it was a different number or...
And I believe it's box 12 is what we set up for it, and we'll be cleaning that every day and ticking people off the list until we can account for everyone.
And certainly,
you know, it's one small thing we can do to try and figure that, because people aren't in the states they started in. So if somebody goes, oh wait, I'm in Memphis, Tennessee, because I think I know one member who did end up there, saying we can say, okay, hey, here's the group nearest you. If you need anything, talk to them, and that will let the rest of us through another part of the state to know where to help somebody,
and,
especially since they've moved.
And certainly if there's anyone listening now who has relocated or who was in this terrible catastrophe, we want to hear from you. We want to know that you're all right. And let me just say what I should have said at least three times before now and haven't, that if you are listening at any other time other than, at any time other than between 10 and 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sunday night in North America, or 2 to 3 Universal, this is a repeat. So calling the number won't help, but calling the ACB number at 800-424-8666. I got too many eights and sixes going on here. That will definitely get you on the list of folks who've been located. We do have a call. Hello, caller. You're with Day and Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, it's Sue Amateur.
Hi there.
Hi, Day. Hi, Sue. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
I was listening kind of delayed because I couldn't get my computer to work right to the Sound Prints, which is done by the Kentucky Council of the Blind, and David Trott called in, and he said they've been, through the Alabama Council, feeding a lot of people. He said last weekend I think they were feeding like 50 people that had been displaced. So I know they're really in need of some assistance, and so if people can, you know, some of us have been trying to figure out where we wanted to send our resources, and I know the Alabama Council is helping people. I think Mississippi and Louisiana are. So if we can get that information out too, I think that'd be great.
Okay, do you have a contact for David Trott just off the top of your head?
He gave a P.O. Box number. It was P.O. Box 1213 Talladega. Let's see if I can get the zip code here. 35 I think he said it was 35163, but his email is dart1018@bellsouth.net.
Okay, so that's dart1018@bellsouth.net, and that's David Trott,
right?
The Alabama Council of the Blind.
So, you know, if you think that he's helping 50 people, that just shows you, you know, the dimensions of this, which, of course, we all know.
Yeah, yeah. All right, anything else?
And I just think that I'm going to try to do this in my chapter. If every chapter of ACB or NFB, whoever's listening, I think if we just had a short period of time at our meetings to talk about disaster preparedness, we all take it for granted until it happens.
Yeah, and I know you were listening in the last hour, and again, I go back to what Mike Hingson said, that he
Absolutely.
Survived because he knew where he was at all times and what to do.
I know it, and, you know, just like you said at the hotel, none of us check where the fire escapes are and that kind of thing, and,
yeah.
You know, or even at your work. I didn't always, so.
Yeah, we take it also for granted.
So anyway,
yeah.
Good show tonight, Marlena, and good guests, and I'll let you and Dave proceed ahead.
All right. Thanks, Sue.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. So the most important thing then in terms of sort of ring two, if you will, is kind of making sure that you know when you're not at home, what's your plan is, and your plan has got to include who is the out-of-state family person, where, if you have children, if you have spouse, where those people will be, and where you go and what you do.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. And the step beyond that, which would be the third, is community-wide. And that's where I really would like to see ACB step in, because there is a void, and that is getting your neighborhood and your community prepared. Because so many of us haven't been a part of the planning initially. And I think we can talk about things like transportation issues. One of the other things that I think has been a pretty large issue is the communication of emergency information. You know, accessible emergency notification.
Yeah. Let's bring our caller in.
Caller. Mm-hmm.
Hi there. You're with Day and Marlena. Who is this, please?
Hi, Marlena. This is Ron Fredrickson.
Boy, my Seattle buddies are checking in tonight. Go ahead,
yeah,
Ron.
Uh-huh.
Did you have a question for Day?
Well, I have a comment, basically, is if you're in an emergency situation, do not panic, you know, because it just makes it worse. And I was wondering, you know, I guess all we can just do is talk it up as how to get the people in not panicking and plan ahead, like to have my medicine ready. And
oh, that's a good point, Ron.
That's a very good point.
That's a very good point. That it's that first ring, we need to add to that your medicine, your service animal's medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good point. And
because if I don't have my medicine, I'd get sick right away.
Well, and I don't know if you heard Mike Hingson in the first hour.
I heard some of him.
Yeah, well, his message was also, you've got to know your surroundings so well that you don't panic.
That's
you
true
don't
too.
Panic. Yeah. Good
mm-hmm.
point, Ron. Well, thanks so much.
Well, I'm glad I called in, and I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you. It's next Saturday, right? Or is it this Saturday?
Oh, no, it's the 24th.
Yeah.
That's right. No,
you scared me.
Saturday.
Okay.
Be in Tacoma.
All right. I'll see you in Tacoma. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. For the 70th birthday of the Pierce County Council of the Blind. Very exciting.
Excellent.
Yeah, isn't that exciting? 866-666-7926. All right. So we're into ring three, getting involved in the community.
Right. Talk to your local Red Cross chapter. I mean, most of them have an emergency planning. They even have their own little booklet, which is preparing for a disaster for people with disabilities and other special needs. I'm not sure that booklet has made it to every local chapter. And, you know, getting in there, letting them know you're interested and involved makes
now,
a difference.
Is that a
and
booklet that we can get in accessible media?
Supposedly. If not, we can yell and I will make sure and do my own yelling and screaming to make sure it is accessible. But so far as I know, I was told that, yes, it is. The other thing is, you know what? There's nothing that stops a blind person from getting first aid and CPR certified.
Boy, you betcha. You betcha. I've taken a first aid course, and, you know, it was years and years ago, and I need to do it yet again. But it's a wonderful feeling to know that you have the ability to help someone. And we have a caller. We're going to ask the caller to turn their computer down. Whoa, caller. Thank you. Hi there. You're with Marlena and Day. Who is this, please? Hello?
Hello there.
Hi there. Roger.
Yeah, it's me.
All right.
Sorry, I was trying to get my radio turned down, and it's about 3 days behind time.
I see. Well, here you are.
I have a dial-up connection, you know, so it's...
Oh, dear me. Well, you've made it to today.
Yeah. So, hi, Day.
Hi.
It's Roger Peterson. Couple of things. One is that I got an email today that you may have seen from Greg Goodrich of AER, president of AER, saying that he wants all the agencies in represented by people in AER to look at what extra stuff they might have on hand that they can share, because people are going to be without their canes and without their talking watches and without everything, you know. And, so that's something that you probably want to think in, you know, have in your database as well, or...
Did he give a collection point for those things, Roger?
No, he said everybody start looking at what you have, and we'll be talking to you again about what to do with it.
Well,
because of course people aren't going to need this stuff until after they get food and water. You know,
right.
It's going to be kind of a secondary thing. But he said that he would be in touch with folks to let them know what to do with the things after they assess, get in touch with the agencies in that area and assess what they need.
When you get that email, would you forward it to me, and I will talk with Dave Williams about making a public service announcement for ACB Radio as well?
Well, I reckon we probably could do something like that.
Well, there you go.
I also wanted to say that, sort of on the downside of things, that if I were going to be a pessimist, I might wonder whether everyone wants us to survive. There were some people, a lot of people felt that some poor black folks were prevented from crossing a bridge by armed police to get out of New Orleans. And if they don't want those folks to survive, they probably don't want us to survive either. But anyway, I did want to mention also that on the SASE list, I saw a message from Tom Brennan, who's a blind audiologist, speech pathologist. And he said that he offered himself as a volunteer to help screen people, and they told him that FEMA could only use able-bodied people.
Oh, my gosh, Day. Oh.
Yeah, I've heard some issues with that and some other problems, and it's kind of one of the things right now when we need as many people who are available to help as possible.
Well, Tom is in Texas, I believe, so he's not far from the, you know, he's probably right in refugee country.
Mm-hmm.
So it that's a concern, too. But anyway, that's about all I have. By the way, Marlena, I just found out that our chapter president, Juanita O'Hara, is coming back to Washington, so grab her into ACB.
You bet. Make sure that you give her my contact info.
She's going to Port Townsend.
Oh, well, then I'll get her in touch with Sue Amateur.
Yeah, right.
There you go. Sue will whip her into shape.
She's an old school friend of Chris Gray.
Great. Absolutely wonderful. We'll definitely make that connection.
That's right.
All okay. Right. Thanks, Roger.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Deal.
866-666-7926. It's about 34 minutes past the hour as I look at it. As you hear it, it could be well after that because of the Internet. We do have another call, but before we take the call, let me just say that if you are listening to this program at any time other than 10 to 11 Sunday night Eastern in North America, you've got a repeat, and so please do enjoy the program. Hi there, caller. You're with Day and Marlena. Who is this?
Oh, it's Kathy Casey.
Hey, Kathy Casey up in Albany, New York.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I just wanted to mention that several blind members of our local chapter and also have amateur radio operators are certified in CPR. We did take a CPR course and did get certified in that. So that's one thing that is in our favor here. Are members of the Albany County Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Services.
Mm-hmm.
So we also took a MCOM, which is Emergency Communications 1 course through the American Radio Relay League. And so we're certified through that also. And that is one of the things they said that, you know, you need to have a 3-day supply and that nothing would, you know, probably happen for at least 3 days as far as, you know, rescuing and stuff. You had to assess the situation first. And that's one of the things in Alabama where they had the hurricane affected. They were complaining that they didn't get any help. And it's like, you know, you don't want to, you know, they're calling people in from outside and you still have to assess the situation first before you can go in there. You don't know the lay of the land. You need to know the lay of the land first before you go in and try and tackle a major problem like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Any thoughts, Day?
Well, actually, I can I definitely understand it. I actually have was looking at some of the American Radio Relay League stuff, and I know that there have been a number of the ham radio operators who've been working emergency lines, and they help pick people off the roof through cell phones and through radio messages back and forth. And I know that we have a group here that I know have been pretty active in some of the emergency communications and stuff. And they do say 3 days be prepared because people on the outside don't know the lay of the land. But if you're on the inside, you do.
Yeah.
So you have a big advantage there, especially if you can help get communications in and out. And by being an active part of that, of the preparations and stuff, you can help make sure that things move much more smoothly and much more easily.
And they also, you know, they say to use your local resources first before you go in and, you know, they're complaining how FEMA didn't get in there fast enough, but they want the local people to work on their own resources first before they, you know, go out into the, you know, venture out further.
Yeah, except that in the case of Katrina or in a natural, you know, disaster or, God forbid, a dirty bomb, you've got no infrastructure. I mean, there's no more local. And I think that was the problem, is that, you know, New Orleans is suddenly under however many feet of water, and the banks are gone, the communication is gone, the law enforcement is gone. So there's no infrastructure left, and that I think is a huge problem that we as a country have never had to deal with.
And I think it'll make sure that, you know, when the next time happens, that there is a better communications, at least infrastructure, to help organize some of that. Because I think much of the problem came from lack of communication, not miscommunication, lack of communication, before miscommunication even comes into it. And so I think that's a big part of it, is making sure to be active. And I think Roger brought up a good point about the long-term effects of this. You know, I can look around my house, like I said earlier, how many assistive devices and odds and ends do I have here that I will have to replace, that other people have to replace?
Yeah.
You know, they're rebuilding entire lives. And the cost of that, it food and clothes and stuff, but we're going to be doing this for months, if not, you know, a couple of years at least.
Yeah, at least.
Oh, at least years.
At least years.
Because, you know, it's going to take years. I mean, I guess what I heard tonight is it may not be as long as they originally thought with the 80 days as far as getting the water out of the city, that it may be out as early as next month, you know, within a month. So that's pretty good. But, you know, again, you've got to rebuild and clean up, and, you know, it'll take forever.
Right, and it's very hard if you've moved somewhere and you don't have anything to move back to, and you have to find a job somewhere in the area. One wonders how many people will move back or have the means to move back.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people. I think Texas is going to, or not Texas, but Texas is going to be inhabiting new residences.
With a quarter of a million people moving in, there's got to be some who will move back.
Yeah, there is
that, too.
Thanks a lot, Kathy.
Okay.
All right.
Have a good evening.
You, too.
All right.
Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I do want to address real lightly, though, as well, one of the things that happened at the convention this summer, and I was in a SASE meeting, which is sight and sound impaired, was we had the fire alarms go off. And one thing that never occurred to me is, you are hearing and vision impaired, how do you know if there's an emergency? And how do first responders know what to do? And one of the things that somebody had mentioned there is, if it's somebody who is dual sensory impaired, it's like you draw a big X on their back.
That's right, absolutely.
And I had never heard that.
And I
spoke to some friends who are first responders. They'd never heard it either.
Yeah, and I do in my private life with the company that I own. I do a lot of training for a very large entity here in the Puget Sound region. And one of the first things when we talk about, because Seattle has a huge population of people with limited hearing and limited vision, all the way to deafblind.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things I tell them is the X, because the X drawn, whether it's on the back, the arm, the hand, everybody knows that means don't ask any questions, stick your hand out, grab an arm, and baby, we're booking, and we'll tell you what's going on later.
Exactly.
And that's a universal symbol. So if you are ever with someone who is deafblind, it's the X. And I'm delighted to hear you say that as well, because it's critical. And even as blind folks, you know, we may be in the presence of people who are deafblind. Make an X. Give them your arm. Grab your cane. Grab your dog.
And get the heck out.
That's right.
Right. And that's something that I know hasn't gone. Like I said, I talked to friends who are first responders. They had never heard it. Never heard of it, you know, and it's kind of like, if you're going to grab a blind person and get them out, I'm like, yeah, we're not going to worry about sighted guide technique or whatever, but at the same time, it's a lot easier to follow somebody if you can grab on and go.
Yeah,
And so some things like that will make a difference, and those few seconds can make a big difference.
Absolutely.
And that has to do with us being active, just as emergency phone numbers as a part of that. You know, those 911 lines are going to be overwhelmed. You better know a number of other phone numbers that you can use. And they may be local numbers, they may be some out-of-state numbers, but make sure you have some alternatives available.
Oh, that's a really good point, and especially now, you know, some of us have the pretty well completely accessible cell phones. Well, put them in your directory, you know, in your address book, in your cell phone is like number one, number two, so that they show up first, or put a punctuation before the name so that it's at the top of your directory list. And if you don't have that kind of a cell phone, if you rely on Braille or large print or cassette, some form of audio, make sure that you always have those emergency numbers nearby, in your wallet, on your person, in your backpack, whatever.
Right.
Because you're right, the 911 lines, I mean, they're just jammed.
Right. And one of the things you spoke to me about earlier was the in case of emergency number on your cell phone.
Yes, the ICE number. If I can just talk about that for a second.
Oh, please.
I heard after the London bombings, one of the first responders said, you know, if people would just do an in case of emergency number, ICE number. So what I did with my cell phone was I put ICE, and then I put my home number, and I put Gary Lieberg's name. But then what happens if Gary and I are together and something happens? So I did an ICE 2, and that is a person out on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's just critical that we think in terms not of paranoia, but of how do we keep ourselves safe in the event that something happens.
Right. And some of the preparation stuff, once you do it, you know, it's done. You have to update it every so often, but it's done. It's not living in a state of paranoia. It's not living in a state of fear. I think one of the little sayings I have here on the Metro is, don't be scared, be prepared.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of this, is the planning, and because that's what will make people calm. And one of those is, like, the communication. It's like messages out, messages in, as best we can. I think it's November 2nd and 3rd here in D.C., there's a big conference on accessible emergency notification and communication. You know, and I know that's one of the things that's going to come up is dealing with people who are deafblind. But also, I imagine just people who are visually impaired and hearing impaired, when those messages come on the screen, you know, are they going to read out, you know, call this number in case there's an emergency? You know, they're just going to flash it on the screen and not read it, or vice versa, they're going to say it out loud and not put it on the screen.
Who is sponsoring that conference, do you know?
I am not sure. If I remember correctly, it actually... No, I am actually not sure who is doing it. I can look that up.
Well, that's okay.
I thought I had it.
No,
I know it's at Gallaudet University.
Yeah.
And it's November 2nd and 3rd here in D.C.
I would be very curious to find out. It sounds like something that, if I possibly could, I might like to actually attend and do some covering for ACB Radio. Because this is a critical thing. This is,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I just keep trying to imagine myself as a blind person in the kind of hellish situation in Katrina, trying to make my way through water that is 50 feet deep or 40 feet deep with the snakes and the sewage, and not even knowing whether I was going in the right direction and what was in front of me. I can't even imagine it.
It's like I said, it's something to think about. And the thing is, the more we think about it and the more we plan, the better we can be before the water gets to be 50 feet deep.
That's right. That's right.
I think that's part of it, you know, figuring out, okay, you know, what are good routes? If there is debris, can I handle it? Do I know it? And like Mike Kingston said, it's like, know it forwards and backwards, because then you aren't going to be quite as afraid. It'll be, I've done this before, not as big. I mean, I can't say it's not a big deal, but... and I think that helps facilitate it. And part of it is the planning and the communication. I think over and over, I think that's going to be my big phrase, is communication is the key. And I think that's where things got confused, and that's where most of the problems arose with Katrina, with communication. And I think it's through that we can make sure that next time things are better, that there is a structure based on that, because aid comes in and out based on that same communication, those same pipelines. That way people know what's needed. And as an individual, you know, we can help create that structure.
Now, what do you suggest? How do we start? You're our director of advocacy and governmental affairs, and immediately when Roger said FEMA didn't want people with disabilities as volunteers, I said, oh, day, and I had to stop myself from saying, fix it. So I imagine
I will probably be looking into that a little bit, because I know that when it comes to things like this, you want anybody who can be any sort of assistance.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I imagine there are a number of ham radio operators out there who are visually impaired, and they're the ones helping relay some of those messages.
Absolutely.
And actually, as another side note, what I know that some smaller communities have had, like condos and things like that, and I know some of the neighborhoods here in D.C. have done it, and this works for some of the smaller neighborhoods, is those little two-way little radios you get at your little local stores.
Right, like the walkabouts.
Don't have a huge range to go outside, but they're great for a neighborhood, especially if you have multiple people in the neighborhood who know it, and you've created a neighborhood community plan as a relay. I'm so-and-so on this and this street. You know, this is what's going on here, and it can be relayed to the next person. This is what's going on in that neighborhood, and go on down until everyone in the neighborhood is informed. It's not the most efficient means, but it is a way, at least for within a small neighborhood, to keep communication going.
That communication may be all that there is in the beginning stages of a disaster.
Right, and then all you need is one of those people to get a message further out.
Right.
And then if there's assistance coming, then everyone in that little relay network has access to that assistance.
Right. Right.
And so that's a simple way for some of the smaller neighborhoods to be able to help go together. If just like a neighborhood watch program, that's exactly what it would be.
How do we as
sorry, you got to get started.
Yeah, how do we get
like
started?
Said, the first step is that first circle. Get yourself in your home prepared. That disaster preparedness kit, it's an easy setup. The 3 days of food, 3 days of water, medications, copies of your most important papers like your Social Security, your ID, your credit card. And one of the things that somebody suggested is put away some cash. Your credit and your bank stuff may not be accessible. Just put it away, forget about it, and have it there ready to go. And that's actually the easiest way to start. The second place was, know your exits. Know your way out. Know who is that out-of-state contact. For ring two. And so by looking at it that way as the separate rings as you go out, it's a little bit easier to look at. Even if you never get past step one, you're at least a little bit ahead of the game than you were before.
Will ACB, I guess I should say will you, since this is kind of all coming through you and probably to you, will you be providing folks down the road with some technical assistance in terms of how you reach out? I mean, I'm very fortunate because, I met this chief of police and he's like right there. I mean, he is ready to really work with blind folks and to get some of the other chiefs of police in the county in which I live and then hopefully in the state the page.
Yeah, the easiest thing I can do is tell people these are the list of the kinds of people to contact, like your local CERT group, your local Red Cross chapter, your local police chief. But the hard thing is I couldn't tell you in which community who is going to be the most responsive.
Sure, sure.
That's the tough part. But I'd be like, talk to those. I just blanked on who was on the transportation board.
Oh, Stan,
I'm like, that's a step two. That's a step also that can be done. And so it is kind of the more difficult things. But I can try to get ahead and put but it'll end up being a list is what I'm afraid of. And lists get kind of scary.
Yeah.
But usually the first thing I'd say is look for your local Red Cross chapter. And the other one would probably be your local community emergency response team.
Now, how do we find that? How do we find the CERT group? Where do we look?
Well, I have a webpage. I'm afraid I don't have a phone number for them at this point yet. And it's like www.citizencorps.gov.
Okay. www.citizencorps.gov.
Right.
Okay.
And one of their programs is the Community Emergency Response Team, and it's administered by the DHS. And I just blanked on what that stands for.
Okay.
But I know that they've got little councils dotted all over the country,
If I remember correctly, Washington alone has 50 separate groups that are community emergency response teams.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I've seen those CERT people on the CNN Security Watch sometimes. They show, and a lot of them are senior citizens, but not all.
Right, these are just ordinary people who are stepping up. And basically what it is the program educates people about disaster preparedness and trains them in basic disaster response skills. And what it is these are the people who are training some of the first responders and training some of the people who help in your community. And by talking to them about it, you can help make their plans work for you, but you're also gaining the skills that you can use to help back to your own community.
Okay, so I would say the
those would be the two.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so the critical things to do are first get your own stuff together, make sure that you've got the 3 days. Here we have a commercial that says be prepared for 3 days in 3 ways. And so make sure that you are prepared within your own home, your own resources. And I will extend a challenge to everyone to really, you know, sit down and make a plan. I mean, we've talked about disaster preparedness on this program before, and we've talked about things like, you know, keeping a cane by a door, you know, doing various things, making sure you've got the water and the food and don't forget the dog and all that. But has anyone ever done that? I mean, you know, and there are kits that you can buy where we have one actually with sterile water in it, and it's got some first aid supplies, and it's got a radio, and it's got a blanket. It's even got a crowbar in it because maybe you need to dig your way out of somewhere. Mm-hmm. So look for those. Ours came through the Red Cross. So there are tools out there that we can use to get started. And then once that's done, how many of you who go to offices absolutely know how to get out? If you are on the 78th floor, could you get out? And when you go to a hotel, you know, yeah, the high rooms are great. You know, you like being up high. It's great. But what are you going to do in the event of a fire? So, and then finally, of course, getting involved with the citizenscorps.gov folks and the CERT groups and the Red Cross groups. And really, you know, we talk as blind people about, well, no one understands, they don't know how to help us. And, well, in this day and age, we need to take some responsibility for that, for them not knowing. And we need to never let this happen again.
Mm-hmm. I think you put it exactly. We need to. We can, and there are many of us who are stepping up to the plate. And I think what ACB, I guess, needs to do as a whole is, as an organization, say we are going to step up. We're going to make sure that every one of our communities that has blind people in it knows how to take care and knows how to take care should an emergency happen, to make sure that every last one of us gets out.
If people want to contact you to kind of get some more ideas and thoughts from you, how do they do it?
They can contact me at the national office, that actually same 800 number, although it'll be a different mailbox number. I think I am box 17.
Okay, so that's 800-424-8666.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it'll say my name and then which box it is. And the other is via email. And that's my first initial, D, and my last name, which is Al-Mohamed, Al-Mohamed, ACB.org.
Okay, so D, mm-hmm. Al-Mohamed, Al-Mohamed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, at ACB.org.
Correct. And I can see about putting together, if nothing else, a simple paper on these are the three circles and how to work out through them, and then try and have that available. It might not be available for a little bit because we're still dealing with some of the things we can do with the whole governmental pressure and other things for some of the long-term needs for people.
I think that would be fabulous. And, you know, if there ever becomes a collection point, and I know Roger will email me when he gets the AER email, but I'm sure there will be other agencies asking, my gosh, how many extra canes do we have hanging around? I mean, I've got three. I could send them right now. You know, canes that are older, I don't use them anymore. Just how many slates and styluses? How many talking clocks? I mean, you know, just...
Or if somebody wants to know, a talking watch, you know what? They're $12 at Radio Shack.
That's
it
right.
It may not be great, but
that's
it's one
right.
less thing that somebody else will have to try and buy so they can know what time it is. It's a simple thing that will make someone else's life a whole lot easier.
So I'm going to also ask my listeners to be thinking about the things that you can provide when the call comes, because the call will come.
Yes.
And help other blind and visually impaired folks. And, you know, thank God that we're on the giving end, that we can help.
Right. We can. I mean, this is something that we can do, and that we can make sure that when we work together, that nothing so terrible is going to hurt as many people in the future.
Well, Day, thank you so much for joining me. You did a wonderful job, and we look forward to seeing you. I guess you're coming out to Seattle in October.
Why, yes, I am.
Yeah.
Actually, I forgot I wanted to also put in, I think, is it Real Change? Is that it's a Seattle paper? We actually have an article in there about the need of disability communities during Hurricane Katrina and the effects on them, because that was the other thing we're trying to do, is, like I said, put some media pressure on there, and we actually made one of the papers in Washington.
Oh, great. So, I'll check it out.
So, but yes, I am very excited about it. I'm like, I must be a Washingtonian at heart because of all the little, like, cheering and all the stuff going on. I'm like, there's so much enthusiasm.
Well, we look forward to having you, and thank you so much for joining me tonight.
All right, thank you
Have
very much.
Have a good night.
All right, good
Bye-bye.
Night.
Well, we're just about out of time. I will be back next week, and thank you so much for joining me this week. And please, please, at least start with ring one. You're all so valuable. We're all so valuable. Every one of us counts. Every one of us matters. Take care, and see you next week. You've been listening to Marlena on ACB Radio. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. But in the meantime, if you've got an idea for a future show, why not drop me an email? The email address is Marlena, that's Marlaina, at acbradio.org. Thanks to Dave Williams, director of ACB Radio, and most of all, thanks to you, the listener. See you next week.